Ads, schmads. If you don't want ads, that's okay. Choose the Dave McWilliams Plus option on Apple Podcasts. And hey presto, no ads.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
What's the crack there? Hope all is well. It is time for the podcast. We haven't said this for a long time. The podcast that makes economics a little bit more acceptable, comprehensible, hopefully a little bit more relevant to your life. Wouldn't you say that, John?
I would. Acceptable. What does that mean? That it's unacceptable in certain quarters?
Yeah, this is unacceptable. Yes, it is unacceptable in certain quarters. But today, John, we are going to talk about NIMBYism, not in my backyard.
Which is completely unacceptable.
Which is completely unacceptable.
In every quarter.
In every quarter. And we're going to contrast that with YIMBYism, yes, in my backyard.
Acceptable.
Now, you might remember about 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had a young fella called Will O'Brien, who was part of this movement called Acceleration Ireland.
Yeah.
And what they were trying to do was say, look,
error accelerationism, isn't it?
Is that what it's called, right?
Error
accelerationism. They were trying to say, look, you know, there are loads and loads of things that can be done in this country if we just get out of our own way, if we just accelerate, let things happen and go for it, right? And I thought it was a very refreshing take on a country that sometimes gets in its own way, right? And if you look all around the world, right, at all the English-speaking countries, all of us have a housing crisis. Mm. America does, Canada does, Australia does, New Zealand does, Ireland does, and England does. And the common denominator in all these countries is NIMBYism, that there is a large and growing part of the population that is saying no. No to infrastructure, no to digging tunnels, no to building railways, no to building new houses, no to building developments.
Schools.
All that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Saying,
but why is it English speaking?
Well, it comes down to, and we're going to talk about it, right, but it comes down to the common law system that we use. Right,
okay.
So you have the two legal systems. It comes down a bit to this, not all, but two legal systems. You have the sort of French Napoleonic system where the state says, this land has been rezoned and it's going to be rezoned for housing.
Yeah, right? No messing around. Let's just do it.
And you can do 14 stories maximum and here's the lie of the land, off you go. No messing around. In our system, we have, and it was really set up to protect the individual over an oppressive state, where the individual has the right to go to the courts to stop the state doing X, Y, and Z, right? Mm. But it was never envisaged that this system would be to stop the state building houses for other people.
Yeah. Right?
But that's
yeah.
the way it's morphed into. So that's the English common law.
This is common law.
Common law system,
but
right?
Common law, but not common sense.
Exactly, John. Yes. Oh, so you see, exactly. Hey. Anyway, so this NIMBYism has, in the last few years, you can see it in Ireland, but it's if you talk to anybody, and your listeners in Canada, our listeners in America, our listeners in the UK, they will tell you, in particular, the UK is particularly bad for this as well, that all sorts of developments, all sorts of progress has been stopped. And the problem with NIMBYism is the following. A few committed people can really undermine the welfare of the many by using the courts to stop things, right?
Yeah.
I've always said that the most dangerous, dangerous unit, political unit in Ireland and in the UK is a very well-organized residence committee, right? And you see that all over, right? A middle-class residence committee who know lawyers, who can use lawyers, because basically it is what I would call the contented classes, right? So basically you have this idea that over the last 50-odd years, certain people have done very, very well in this country and in other countries.
Yeah.
And they are now basically taking the drawbridge and putting it up behind them and saying, we've done well, so we want our houses to be beside the best schools, beside the best hospitals, beside the best public parks, beside the best public infrastructure, and we don't want anybody else coming near it. So we don't want to share with the rest what we have.
Yeah.
So what they're using the courts to protect their own interests. And they're doing it on this bizarre idea of entitlement or rights, my right to light, my right to a view, my right to this, that, and the other. Now, the problem with rights is the counterpart of rights is responsibilities. And the responsibility on the part of the state is to try and look after the vast majority.
Yeah.
Now, there was a fantastic letter in the Financial Times the other day, and it was talking about NIMBYism. And here is the charge sheet.
Go on, yeah, yeah.
So it was the letter was, NIMBYism is destroying the country and it has resulted in, this is in the UK, lower spending power for working people, longer commutes, less energy efficiency for the nation, the loss of benefits of agglomeration, including transport, and I'll explain that in a minute, expensive and cancelled infrastructure, a shortage of office space and lab space, increasing the cost of business, the misallocation of capital. Capital is invested in non-productive assets rather than in entrepreneurial ventures. Dismal pension and savings culture as people use homes for investment. Massive social housing bill. Labour market inefficiencies as people can't afford to move for work. Pollution and over-congestion due to car-centric culture due to a lack of densification cities, dead high streets and shopping districts due to opportunity costs related to the city. Exactly. Just think about this. Right? Health issues due to dilapidated homes costing the NHS billions, or in the Irish case, the HSE, right? A lack of affordable downsizing options for the elderly and a lack of suitable condominiums for young people. Childcare costs going through the roof and lower spending power due to housing costs preventing people from starting a family in the first place.
Yeah, yeah.
Water shortages in one of the wettest countries in the world. That's in the UK, but we know all about that here.
Yeah, yeah.
Expensive power due to councils banning new electricity developments and a lack of green space and play areas for children in cities due to preference for sprawl preventing density. So that is a charge of about 15 very, very commonsensical observations about the way in which NIMBYism is affecting not just the cost of living, but the quality of life.
Yeah.
And I think this is worthy of a podcast, John.
Well,
I think this is worthy of a podcast.
And here we
right?
are.
And here we are, right? And again, it's this idea that when somebody decides to lodge a protest, do they stop and pause and think about what it's doing for the society? And I think that if we had an idea which would be kind of legitimate objection, so let's say, for example, if a development is clearly in breach of zoning regulations, John.
Yeah.
Then yes. But the idea that somebody can put their personal interests over the interests of the community at large without ever stopping to think about how their activities are affecting the rest of us, I think this is delinquent behavior. So I think serial objectionism is antisocial.
Mm.
And I think it should be seen as antisocial. We're very, very quick, for example, to say some young fella in town, you know, drinking cans is antisocial behavior. You know, when we, and everyone's, oh, that's very antisocial, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what's actually really antisocial is, you've talked about it before, dilapidation, allowing buildings to go to rack and ruin, number
Absolutely,
one.
Absolutely, yeah.
What's really antisocial is preventing people living beside good public infrastructure, preventing people living beside good hospitals, preventing people living in dense areas. That's really antisocial. So what we want to do in this podcast, John, is call out the objectors as being antisocial delinquents in our social mix that is this, the ecosystem of society.
Like, what does that say, this kind of NIMBYism and a lack of appreciation, perhaps, or a lack of care for the greater good? Like, what does that say about a nationalism in not in a Republican kind of way, but you know, a sense of nationhood.
Well, it's
you know, it's something like what Martin Lusso, your mate from Argentina, said before,
which is
a brilliant quote, and it sums up a lot of this kind of attitude. Is people are very quick to wrap themselves in the flag and be great patriots, but when it comes to playing their part, they're shit citizens.
Yeah, it's the great patriots and the shit citizens is a really good way of encapsulating this. I would go one further and say what we have in English-speaking countries is we have set up a legal avenue for people to put themselves first and portray themselves as victims. This is the key that, you know, this development is going up beside me. I will be a victim of overdevelopment. I'm the victim. So what they actually do is they manage in their heads to see themselves as the aggrieved.
When
in fact, they are the ones doing the aggrieving. So let's cut to the chase. Ireland is a country in a deep housing crisis. We need to build maybe 50, maybe 60,000 houses a year simply to keep up with the demand of the population, right? Anything that prevents that, anything that puts a cap on the amount of homes we can build, leads to increase in house prices and, more importantly, increases in rents, right? Now, anything that increases rents causes a stream of income to go from young workers to old landlords, right? That's the way it is, right?
Sure.
So if you look at the case in Ireland, if you look in the case, the most recent figures for people renting show a profound reduction in their take home after rent wage due to high rents. And the survey data shows that 43% of all Irish people say that they are paying 25%, a quarter of their take home pay on rents.
Mm.
But that's 43. So that's like about half people, right?
That'd be kind of expected, wouldn't it?
13% are paying 40% of the take-home wages, and 7% are paying 50%. Now, can you imagine what their lives would be like if we built more apartments and rents came down? Suddenly, you have a liberation of a huge proportion of the population. And then you think, okay, who are these people?
Mm.
If the vast majority of NIMBYist objectors are usually upper middle class people looking after I'm all right, Jack, right?
Yeah.
Who's actually paying the bill? So the bill is being paid by society, but because the bill is being paid by the many, not the few, the many tend not to be able to join up the dots. So this podcast is going to join up the dots for them. This is our exclusive social obligation, John, right? So who's renting? Poorer people rent. Younger people rent, right? So what you have, again, we come back to joining up the dots. You have old homeowners are doing very well, thank you very much, because the price of their homes goes up.
Yeah, and young, they've grown up substantially.
Over the last 25 years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, young renters' incomes go down because rent has gone up and they can't get on the property ladder because they're too bloody expensive.
Yes.
So they're totally and utterly isolated from the merry-go-round that is the property game.
Yeah.
And therefore, they feel left behind. Now, you don't have to be a genius to figure out that this has a political ramification, which is that they will vote for various different people who say, hold on a second, we're going to fix this, right?
Yeah.
But that's the first thing.
Also, over the last 20 years, there has been zero or negative interest rates. So there's no chance of building any sort of savings up because there's no point in saving.
Well, there's no point in saving. So again, richer people who have savings have naturally decided to invest in property.
Yeah.
And again, so you get this constant reinforcing of the inequalities. But the more important thing is think about public infrastructure. If we complain every time, I don't know if you've been watching the submissions about the Dublin Metro.
No, I haven't actually. I can't bring myself to look at that.
So this is just for Irish people.
I'd be throwing stuff at the telly, I'm sure.
Yeah. And like everyone has got, you know, this is going to upset my quality of life. This is going to upset this, that. The city needs a metro.
Yeah.
To bring some sort of transport infrastructure to the majority.
Yeah.
Does it matter that a small amount of people are inconvenienced? No. But again, the millions who will eventually use the metro have no voice in this complaint, this objecting process. So they are frozen out. So the people who will benefit, it's like, for example, the millions of people who would benefit for lower house prices and higher density have no avenue to lodge their complaints. So the only people who can complain are the incumbents. So what you have is, again, an insider-outsider dilemma.
Yes.
That the insiders have the avenue to express their grievances, and the outsiders aren't even mandated, even though the outsiders are the ones who are going to benefit.
So can I ask you, this isn't specific to Ireland.
No.
So what happens in other countries?
Well, you'll enjoy this as because you're obviously a Republican. And deep down, you're an American Republican, a Trump supporter,
yes,
I know.
Yes. Red.
In the United States, red cities, Republican cities, have much lower house prices than Democrat cities.
Okay. Right, is that because they're poorer?
No, it's because they have far less regulation, they have far less NIMBYism. So basically what happens is you take a city like San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
San Francisco attracts in a very high class of tech worker, right? Mm. And a very highly educated tech worker. These highly educated tech workers agglomerate in, for example, San Francisco. House prices go up. These highly educated people say, well, look, this is great for me. And you know what I really don't want? I don't want any fucking, you know, other Joes coming in to do this. So what you have is highly restrictive under the umbrella of respectable development or preserving the what they call the built heritage. You have highly restrictive planning legislation, number one, and you have highly NIMBYist society, right? So surprise, surprise, what's happening? House prices are going through the roof, Whereas in more Republican areas where they have much less regulation, they're building more homes, they're actually building denser, and rents are falling. So what you see is that you're much better off if you are a young renter to be actually voting Republican than voting Democrat, which is a bizarre thing to say.
That is, isn't it?
So you see this all over the world, that where you have heavily regulated areas, some for the best reasons in the world, some of the idea of regulation is good.
Yeah.
But what you will do is it allows the NIMBYist culture to drive a coach and horses through the objective of creating more homes. So take, for example, our country. In 2019, the Irish government came up with 25 strategic housing development areas. So these were things that were going to fast track development. We're going to build loads of houses, loads of homes, loads of apartments. We're going to do 28 of these. 16 of them are still in the courts, stalled by objections.
Okay.
So how can you develop if you have a court system?
Yeah.
So the idea should be, look, take a leaf out of the book of countries that have fixed their development problems, or at least are further down the road.
Yeah.
You zone, you put very, very strict and binding guidelines of what you can and cannot do in a certain area.
Such as who?
Well, France is a very good example.
Okay.
France, Italy, these are good examples. Spain, these are all good examples of countries that have actually got to the stage where they build dramatically. Particularly the Spaniards mainly live in apartments and they've had massive development. Right?
Well, Spain is a particular point though, because you've had this huge emptying out of Spain.
Of rural Spain,
areas, yeah.
As you have in France, as you have in Italy as well.
Italy as well, yeah.
But so what you have is a situation where you zone, you say, this is what can be done, this is what can't be done. There is no right to complain if the builders, developers, or the state are within the guidelines.
Mm.
Then it clears everything up. What the problem here is that because there's so much objection, developers also play a game, which is the following. They say, we want to build an apartment block of 8 stories, but we're going to throw in a planning proposal for 16 stories. This will then smoke out the NIMBYists.
Right.
The NIMBYists will come in and say, we can't have 16 stories. And then the planning authorities say, look, we'll settle on 12. Right? So it's a game. I'm not saying the NIMBYists, it has become a game between developers and NIMBYists.
But that game in itself is delaying the whole process.
Everything.
We need houses now. When do we want them? Now.
What do we want? Loads of houses. When do we want them? Now.
Now.
No. But so what you see, now let's go back. Look, what has happened in Ireland is so many young people are emigrating, not because there aren't jobs here, which is why we emigrated, but because they expect quality of life, which involves, at the very basic, having a gaff.
Yeah.
Right? That's it, right? So that's it.
The opportunity to strike out on your own, get away from mum and dad.
But then just look at what else is happening here, right? Like, Irish housing costs are now 94% higher than the European average. 94% higher.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
In 2012, they were only 17% higher. So you know the way people say, oh, the reason the house prices have gone up in Ireland is the cost of materials all around the world has gone up.
Yeah, yeah. Supply chains.
Steel has gone up and supply chains and glass has gone up and la, la, la. No. Irish house prices are now 90. So they're almost double the European average. And 10 years ago, they were only about 17% above average. Right. So what's going on? What is going on is you get this massive demand.
Yeah.
And again, we have to talk about immigration as well, because at a certain stage, the government has to figure out how many immigrants can we absorb?
Yes.
What is the capacity?
Yeah.
Right? And if the capacity is 10,000 or 20,000, based on house prices, based on demographics, based on planning, based on the health service, based on the education service, well, then do this. Well, at the moment, we've none of this, right? So people are coming in and out of the country. And nobody knows who's coming in and out. But all we know is that immigrants are people, and people need houses as well, right? So we have to figure that one out too.
Yeah.
So you've got the demand side, things have gone through the roof here. And of course, on the supply side, you get planning regulations and delays. And all of this is gumming up the entire system, right? And this is leading to a dramatic fall in the quality of life in Ireland. So what we have is a very strange situation. Our standard of living, which you should think is an objective idea, has gone up. But commensurate with that, the quality of life, particularly for younger people, has gone down.
Yeah.
Which is why they're leaving.
Yeah.
Because people leave for
a
reason.
And you don't blame them.
Right? They leave
for a reason. It's heartbreaking, but you don't blame them.
And the crazy thing then is, then one last piece of this jigsaw, John, is we have NIMBYism in the development of the housing market.
Yeah.
But we also in Ireland have YIMBYism when it comes to multinationals. The Irish government So the Irish government always says yes to development.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Always. Google come in here, Facebook come in here, TikTok come in here, blah, blah, blah. We're basically promiscuous in the extreme when it comes to attracting an investment. So they all come in here, which is fantastic, but then they smash into NIMBYism when it comes to developments of houses.
Yeah.
So you have YIMBYism and NIMBYism together. And the problem, of course, is there's no joined up thinking. So the Department of Housing is not talking to the IDA. When the IDA goes out to get in 10,000 jobs from a new tech company, nobody in the Department of Housing is saying, hold on a second, we've no houses.
Hold on
a second, we've no public infrastructure. We haven't even got the density here. We don't have the train system, all that sort of stuff.
And
right?
and there's been, of late, I'm trying to think of the name of the company that had the choice of investing in Ireland, moving their head office to Ireland, or Portugal. And they chose Portugal.
Well, of course.
And that was a big part of the reason, is where are we going to house our workers?
Yeah, and I mean, this comes back to the idea of the joined up thinking, right? So we have YIMBYism al fresco in the investment, multinational, do your thing here. We have NIMBYism gumming up the system. And of course, the cost of that is emigration of younger people who say, you know what? Yeah, I wouldn't mind working in Ireland. And yes, there are opportunities, but I don't want to live in the box room with my mum and dad.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Right? Because it's going to cost me 1,800 quid to move out. And 1,800 quid is too much, right? So this is the way in which the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. The right side of the brain doesn't know what the left hand side of the brain is doing. And all the while, the people who are benefiting are the already wealthy, because they are the people who have the time and the money to go and object. And they are the people to basically say, not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't just in Ireland. This is happening in the UK. It's happening in Canada. And it's happening hugely in prosperous areas of the United States.
Okay, so let me ask you then, how do we approach this? How do we change this? Is this government policy? You know, after all, people are exercising their democratic rights. So if we take away those rights, you know, there is going to be a backlash from that too. So how do we address this? But why don't we explore that after a bit of this?
Yeah. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, Mark. So we're talking about NIMBYism and YIMBYism. And
you like these words.
I do. But you're absolutely right. When they do clash, and they do all the time, you know, at the end of the day, as you said, there's a lack of joined up thinking. And that joined up thinking should be happening at a government level.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a local government level too, and all the communication between that. But NIMBYism is people voicing their concerns, legitimate concerns possibly, and exercising their democratic right.
So no, I don't believe it is democratic.
Well, explain that. Like, how do we address this without infringing on people's rights?
Well, I don't think you have an intrinsic... I think you have a right not to be beaten up by the cops, for example.
Okay.
I think you have a... You know, there are certain rights that are inalienable to democracies, which is about, you know, freedom of speech, all that sort of good stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have a right to undermine other people's ability to get a house at the right price, because that's what it's doing. You do not have a right to put your house price value over the good of the nation. These are not rights. These are a bastardization of a legal system that has been corrupted in order to facilitate the, what I would say, the income and the bulge bracket of the rich,
yeah.
Right?
That's what.
So there is no right to say, you know what? I don't want those people living beside me. I don't want this development. That's not a right. That is really a bit of social snobbery. And social snobbery shouldn't be enshrined in any constitution. But what we're doing is we are enshrining snobbery into our legal system. And we're then saying, it's my constitutional right to be a snob.
Mm.
That's what's actually happening. If, you know, what happens if those immigrants come in here? What are those types of people come in beside that? They're not our people. This is what's actually going on.
Yeah.
Like when you drill down really deeply into a lot of objection, what you have is class war.
Okay.
That's what you have.
Yeah.
That's not a right. It is a legitimate expression of snobbery, if that's what you want to be, but it shouldn't be protected by the Constitution. It shouldn't be protected by the legal system. The state has to function for all the people. That's the essence of democracy.
Yeah.
Come back to our one man, one vote idea, yeah. Right? So that's the first thing. But the second thing is that we're penalizing the young. We are penalizing the very people that we hope are going to carry and shoulder the burden of this society in the future.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So it's where our innovation is going to come
it's
from.
It's where everything's going
it's
to come
from. It's our next chapter of the story of
the
Ireland.
The next chapter of the story of Ireland is going to come from 20-year-olds, right?
Yeah.
Not 60-year-olds,
yeah.
From 20-year-olds. And we have a system which is benefiting the 60-year-old and penalizing the 20-year-old. And we're assuming or hoping that some of the 20-year-olds will be the kids of the 60-year-olds, so they're going to be all right.
Mm.
But what that does is it just reinforces not just class divide, but opportunity divides, right?
Yeah.
And this way, in order to actually make the society work better, like, just think about it. Think about capital. Think about the exploitation of capital and the misallocation of capital, right? Mm. Because we have enshrined in the housing market an idea that houses are for investment, loads and loads of capital is invested in what we call non-productive assets in housing.
Yeah.
Private capital, which could be going into setting up companies, which could be going into innovation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which could be going into all sorts of areas where you have the Schumpeterian gales of creative destruction. Mm-hmm. But what it's doing is it's going into this sort of dismal bricks and mortar. And then you think about pensions. Huge amount of Irish, British, American pension funds go into housing.
Yeah.
So what you have again is the capital of the old. Not only is it actually increasing because they're the people who are actually complaining and lodging these complaints and their house prices are going up, but the extra capital they have is also going into bloody houses.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But it's going into houses that are hyper expensive. What we need to have is a situation where capital goes to finance young startup companies. That's going to be the next phase of innovation. As you said, the next chapter of Ireland, or of America, or of Canada, or of the United Kingdom, right? What we have now is we've ended up with a system which is probably the worst possible system you could end up with, which is rather than have one big plan, and here's the rules, and here's the regulation, now go and do your thing.
Mm.
What we have is sporadic, bitty plans, non-joined up thinking, and I come back to what we did at the start, John. The rights, or the so-called rights, of the very few trample over the opportunities of the many. And that is a recipe for disaster.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.